you could speak it, when you speak, if you could speak into the microphone, turn it on and speak into the microphone, so we'll recording the meeting. That was a request from last time. So in order to, for us to make sure we're actually interpreting your request correctly, we don't want to, you know, we want to give you the information that you want. And I don't want to just take, well, this is the you know, verbatim of what you asked for, and, you know, we're trying to help you ask the questions to get the information you're looking for. So what we did is we asked Laura Pimentel, who is our chief over here, who is our chief information officer, and is master of all things regarding our student information system, to come tonight so we could talk about the request as far as the class sizes and the enrollment in per class and all of that kind of stuff, the list of electives, yada, yada, yada. So we thought it might be best for Laura to be here, talk to you about what it is exactly you're looking for, and that can help us put the information together in a format that's of use to you. So, Mike, I mean, the request at first had come from you. So do you want to speak a little bit about exactly what it is you're looking for, and then we'll figure out how we can get you that information? Okay, so, I mean, one thing our HR department is working on, and there was a request also for that, I think it might kind of have tailed on to that request, was going back several years, too. So what HR is working on is putting a list together, not necessarily of names. I mean, included in the handout tonight is a list of all the administrators in the district by name and title. My thinking is you're not all that concerned with the names of all the teachers, all the teaching assistants, just how many first grade teachers we have, how many second grade, how many art teachers, how many phys ed teachers, how many psychologists, that kind of thing. Is that correct?
Right. It's kind of just, I know they're not administrators, but
administrators. Okay.
I think to build on that is, you know, if they are a chair, what are their full responsibilities, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, so, because right. A chair might be for one subject in one building, it could be for that same subject in multiple buildings. I think it's important to have that understanding.
Well, it would be a lot more cumbersome. It's not secret. I mean, it's, you know, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, I'm not going to tell you who they are. I don't mean it that way. But it's one thing to say, well, we have 80 special ed teachers. Now, that could be, you know, one line on a sheet of paper each year, how many special ed teachers we have. If you want the names of all 80 teachers, well, now it's going to be that one section is going to be a couple of pages long, and it's going to change from year to year, and this one retired, and that one, you know, so people come and they go. I mean, is that what you're looking for, like the names of all?
Well, for this request, we want to do this. Well, like two requests. So one is, like, the number of teachers that are teaching in each class, and the other one is, like, which ones are, you know, are, like, a department head or a lead teacher or
uh-huh. Sure. Okay. So what we could do too is, so as I said, HR is working on that one list, and that list that they're working on will say, and I think it was this year and going back 5 years, each year, how many first grade teachers, how many second grade teachers, how many science teachers, how many special ed teachers, how many custodians, how many clerical, how many teacher aides, special ed aides, how many teaching assistants, that kind of thing, each year. So then, and you have the list of administrators that I just gave, that's current.
Can I just break it 1 second?
Sure.
When you're going down that list, like when you're going through TAs and SEAs, we also need that extra 20, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. And I can tell you right off the top of my head, all special ed aides are IEP driven.
Probably, yes.
Otherwise they wouldn't be there. And in some cases, you know, it could be that, I mean, we have plenty of classrooms where there are multiple adults in the room. It's not just a teacher and an aide, you know. So, you know, especially for, you know, I'm older than most here, but, you know, when I was a kid, there was one adult in the classroom, and that was the end of that, and that was that. And 30 kids. It ain't that way anymore. So, like it or not, it's just not that way. We have plenty of classrooms with multiple adults because this student might need a one-to-one, that one might need a one-to-one, other students, there could be a variety of reasons why there are, whether it's a monitor, a teaching assistant, or a special ed aide in the room. And it's so, and I assume when you say IEP driven, you would also include with that 504 driven.
Yes.
Okay, so it's mandated for some specific reason. And it could be that, well, that aide is in the room or that monitor is in the room, it could be because of one student in the room.
Of course.
So,
right.
Yeah.
And those who really, I mean, we want them broken out because we know that that's, they need to be there. But if we're just looking to see who else is in the building that is not there because of the mandate.
Got it. So I think, hold on, let me just write that down. Okay, we should probably have someone from HR here too that can speak to that, their duty, maybe even a principal or two that can speak to exactly what it is they do better than I could. Like a monitor in a hall, what are they doing? Are they just monitoring the hall, or is it part of the day they do that, part of the day they do something else? Okay, that sounds good. Yeah. All right. So as far as like the class size stuff, master schedule, that kind of stuff, is there things you're looking for with that?
So the class size reports that you guys sent over, yeah. I'm not sure if it's best to go through like minutia here, but maybe making it all like a list of questions based on it or
want it. Sure, that's fine. Yeah.
I could speak to that. Can you hear me? Underneath the gray total line are all of the AAS sections, and we just separated those out because AAS sections are typically smaller. The academic intervention service sections,
gotcha.
They're typically smaller class sizes than the regular sections.
And, but there were some years where that
wasn't
available?
I think, and I started doing this in 2016, I think before that they included them in the class sizes, and then there was a year where they started taking them out. No, they were definitely available in those years. Yep.
So with the course numbers, sometimes there would be additional letters after it, like H or R is on honors or regions.
Yep. Regents level is an R, H is honors level.
Okay. And then someone had a Y afterwards, they have a question.
I don't know all of the coding. Do you know which specific course?
Well, I mean, there's some courses are required for some kids and not others. So it's not, I correct me if I'm wrong, Laura, but it's not like, well, these are all required classes, these are all electives. It depends on an individual student's program. Well, some of those that's an elective for you might be required for me and vice versa.
Set up their program, as they progress into high school, some students go on, you know, different track. If they're going through AP programs, then those are required to complete that sequence of
right.
programs.
But like no kid has to take math in 12th grade, right? So that doesn't mean, so I mean, you could say, well, we don't need to offer math in 12th grade. All right. Well, but for some kids, their program, they need to take math.
Most students take math in 12th grade.
That's exactly. That's exactly my point. Right. Yeah, so to say, well, those are not required classes.
Right.
Well, okay, but
classes noted as AP classes?
Yep, they all have AP in the name.
Oh, yeah, there was, for elementary school, there was last year's report with Massey, but there were two line items for sixth grade, two line items for fifth grade.
Yeah, so last year we had the remote elementary school. And we had, so some of those students were attending remotely and some of them were attending in person. So we had separated them out. Was there a 4-5 section?
Yes.
So we merged 4-5 because we didn't have enough students to make two classes for fourth and fifth remote. So we merged a 4-5 into one.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so that's our skinnied classes. So sometimes there are different courses, but they meet in the same room at the same time with one teacher. Multiple classes, yep. And that's typically like an art class or... No, it wouldn't be honors AP. It's usually, and the high school could speak to this much better than I can. But... For example, public speaking and public speaking honors, they do meet at the same time in the same room, those two courses.
So, like, these PDFs, it looks like maybe they were running past them,
Yeah, so this data is pulled from Infinite Campus, and then I work with the AP in each building, who knows their courses way better than I do, and how you've coded everything. And we collapse the skinnied classes or courses into one row so that we're not looking at them as two separate sections because they actually meet at the same time with one teacher. But everything in here is everything that's in Infinite Campus.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I changed the question. The topic. These reports, there was 30 PDFs. For,
yep.
Right? Were those reports that you guys already had that had been constructed?
These are presented to the Board of Education every fall. So
okay.
these are the same reports that the board received in the fall.
Okay. Yeah, it was just there's a lot of work to sort of add those PDFs, but the spreadsheets a lot of times columns that line up, and there was like a lot of times the same class to schools were like call sense of difference. There's a way to get like an all A spreadsheet in it.
Yeah, I mean, I could take what we used for this. I wouldn't want to give you the raw data because, like I had to do, I had to sit with an AP and move things around because you wouldn't know which classes were the AIS classes, which ones are special ed classes. So that's why we moved them under the total line. But I could give you exactly as you're seeing it here in Excel. Can I give it to you in multiple and you move it into one? I mean, I could. It's just it's very time consuming.
Yeah, I'll go through too much more time. So the reason why I ask is because there are like inconsistencies, columns swapped in some reports.
Oh, you mean with the tally, average, and section?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and you know, the course names are not standardized.
Nope. So the course names are not standardized, but the course numbers are. So if you're seeing the same course number, it's the exact same course across all of our secondaries.
Michael, regarding the inconsistencies, there's no reason why you can't put together what you've got, send it to you, you'll check it and explain the inconsistencies and then send it back, rather than you invest too much time trying to sort it out.
Yeah.
You're happy to do that, is that right?
I think it would be helpful to get multiple spreadsheets, the same thing.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, are you looking for also like a list of how many kids are in each section?
Yeah, I mean, ideally it would have been nice if there was a line item for each course number.
Is that, can that be done that way?
Yes, it can be.
Okay.
We've already aggregated it with the tally of students and the sections
and
the average, but you want them broken out even more.
Wait, what?
So each of these class size reports, that tally is the student count in the course. And then we have the count of sections. So you're seeing that there's, for example, English 9.
How many sections have 1 to 10 students? How many sections have 11 to 15? I think you mean the exact number of students in each section. Is that what you're asking?
Or is the range like that good? Or is the range like that good enough? If 10 are on, or what was it? One, what's the breakdown? 1 to 10, 11 to 15?
Yeah, 0 to 10, 11 to 15.
Or is it? Right.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, from a data analysis perspective, it's much easier to have a line item for each item, and then I can aggregate it the way I want to aggregate it. But the way you're nodding your head is like, it's going to be a lot of work.
So how many years are you looking for?
25.
No, just what we've got already.
Just current.
Just these.
Just the same with what you said, like the last five.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Okay, so course name, the section, separated out, and the count of students.
Yeah, and like as a like general rule, that's the best way for us to get data, like without headings and formatting and stuff like that. It just makes it a lot easier to build our reports, their own analysis.
Okay.
Yeah, with that, right, because we don't do the budget in Excel. It's in a financial, and then the report can get converted into Excel. Yeah. But what it does is it takes that report as if you had printed it and just plops it, just like if I handed you the report and you type keyed in every cell. Yeah, so it doesn't, I mean, that's, you know, short of somebody just typing it all in, that's, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if it
I mean, if you want, I mean, listen, I don't mind cleaning those up either. You know, I'm more than happy to do that. If you tell me you'd rather have it, at least, I mean, I'm not going to delete important stuff. I don't mean it that way. But, you know, I just want to make sure if you're okay with me just taking it and cleaning it up and making it easier to read format, I'd be glad to do that. Sure, no problem.
And so we got the budget for 2019, 2020. I mean, these are already in your database that are pretty usable, I guess. We can have 18, 19 as well. And is there a way to pull like this year's with the how much has been dispersed so far?
Sure.
Current would the year-to-date be?
Well, I mean, it's current. You know, I mean, every payroll gets posted and every check run gets posted when it's done. What it won't have is there's adjusted entries that are done at the end of the year or accruals made, that kind of stuff. So it would show what the accruals were at the end of last year, still in there, without accruals for this year. You know, some things like... you know, and some get paid once a year. So, so for instance, our payment to the employee's retirement system, that's once a year. So if we run the report and we haven't made that payment yet, it's going to show zero in that line.
Correct. Yeah.
The next month, you might see $2 million in that line.
Right.
So some of them, some payments go pretty much, you know, and you kind of see it as the months go on. Sometimes the billing is a little behind. We might be paying, I'm making this up, in next week's check run, we might be paying our December school bus invoice. It might be in next month's check run. It depends on when we receive the invoice, all that kind of stuff. So you might look at it now and say, well, we're halfway through the school year. So through December is halfway through the fiscal year. Through January is halfway through the school year. So some of the payments kind of run more like we pay 10 times a year, school buses. I mean, the big buses and mini buses. There's summer, there's athletics, there's all field trips, all of that kind of stuff, which, you know, further complicate things. But But the big amounts are paid 10 times a year, once a month. Some things are paid 12 times a year. You know, electricity, we pay 12 times a year, that kind of stuff. Some of our electricity bills, it's not always just one bill per month. It could be because we get separate bills for different schools. So when we get the bill in, we pay it. If we have multiple to pay at one time, we'll pay it at one time. So things like that. So the year to date, you know, it's informational, but you don't. It's not necessarily just, well, if I would have run it for you today, you'd say, okay, well, this is 7 months into the fiscal year, so divide that by 7, multiply by 12, and there you go. That's the projected for the year. Not necessarily. But it's up to date, though. I mean, as I said, every payroll that we have, we get paid every 2 weeks, gets posted. And we do check run every 2 weeks, and that gets posted when it's done. So you had said 18, 19, the budget, like as I did the 19, 20?
Just curious, is the payroll and other bill payments on opposing 2 weeks?
Yes.
Okay. I have another question about revenues. Revenues, what kind of statement is that report on? Like a business, like an income statement, an actual business statement that shows.
Well, I could do a revenue report for you the same way.
Yeah,
sure, no problem.
What comes in from various different summer programs?
Sure, no problem. Yep. Yeah. I mean, of course, the vast majority of our money comes from school tax, state aid. I mean, that's the vast majority. But there are other things, too. We have outside groups using the buildings. We have other districts that pay tuition for kids to attend school here. We have a number of revenue sources. Sure, no problem. Okay. All right. Anything else as far as specific budget requests? I mean, you can, if you think of something before we leave tonight, too. And then of course, after we leave tonight, if you think of something, it's just like last time, you can always send an email, too. Any other questions for Laura regarding master schedule, class size data, course data, any of that kind of stuff? Should we be brave and let Laura leave? Okay. Laura's got little kids at home.
I just have a quick question. I don't know if this is something that is connected to you or not, but if I would like to see enrollment in this district, mm-hmm. specifically since 2012-13 that year up to the present, because I'm finding conflicting reports, and I'd like to know what are the real numbers so that I can report to the community specifically and have good data. And then I'd also like, with that, budget totals that you have had on the budget since 2012 to 2013. Those are two things that I'd like to see clarified and confirmed by the district. So I have that information.
When you're talking about enrollment, are you looking for a specific date? Generally, what we do when we set enrollment, we use a beds date to set that. Are you looking, because the enrollment...
Could you repeat what you just said, though? I couldn't really hear you.
Sure, that's okay. Can everybody hear me now?
Yes.
So when we look at enrollment, because enrollment changes throughout the course of the year, generally, the enrollment number we use is a beds date, which is in October.
What does that mean, please?
The beds date is where we submit information to the state education department that has to do with our enrollment in the school district in the state.
It's the first Wednesday of October.
Right.
And beds stands for basic educational data.
If you had to report to somebody and say on this,
for
this year, this is how many people we had, I'd like that information.
So that would be the bed state.
Yep, we would use bed state data. It is also available to the public on data.nysed.gov.
There is a
state website.
Yeah, I just pulled some information from there today. And
and people often say to me, oh, the numbers are off. So if
right.
even in district, if you pull the numbers on a different day other than bed state, they will be different.
But also when we talk about enrollment, are we talking about the students who are here who are district residents in our schools? Are we talking about students who are tuitioned in? Do we
well,
want to
I mean,
them
you
in
have
enrollment?
To tell me because in the district, if I'm, you know, as a regular citizen, I don't know what the semantics are in terms of if I want to know how many people are included, are we paying for with this money that we're giving you? What number are you going to tell me? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. So that number would be our students who are district residents or the students who are paying tuition to come in. Those are the students who are instructing. But our district funds are paying because those students are paying those tuitions.
But I would include the tuitioned in students too.
Yep.
Because
mm-hmm.
they show up in our expenditures.
Right. Yep. And then we have a lot of students who are placed by the CSE in out-of-district placements. So that includes our BOCES or our private school placements placed by the CSE. So sometimes those numbers mm-hmm. at the state level, depending on which reports you're looking at, might not be reflected
right.
in those numbers. But we could, mm-hmm. I could pull all of that for you.
So then how does the state know what kind of funding to give us if you have all these different numbers? What do they base it on, that date that you're talking about? Like, in other words?
So state aid is, it's not, like even, first of all, it's state aid is fluid. So day to day, not just year to year. So even when the state comes out sometime in March or April, when the state completes their budget, mm-hmm. says, that's it, state budget's done, mm-hmm. here's all the, and you'll see in the paper, here's what every school district is getting
right.
the state aid for next year.
Right, which we just saw.
It's still an estimate. And mm-hmm. it's based on there's a lot of different categories of state aid. It's mm-hmm. based on a lot of different factors go into all of that. So you can print out what's our state aid today and print that out next week, and
right.
it'll be different.
How about if I propose it like this? If you were to make a brochure about the school and you were to say, our enrollment is, what is the number that you would
that's
place?
That's not a problem. But what we're trying to say, though, is you might look up something on state aid website and see
right.
a different number and say, well, wait a second.
What that's
is
what
it?
I'm seeing.
And that's what Laura's so, explaining.
Okay, right.
There are
but it's off by
but if,
tens,
right.
50s, hundreds?
I wouldn't say
no,
necessarily.
Not even that much.
No.
Okay.
No. But we would give you beds, date, enrollment.
All right, so let's
right.
just
that's
sit
the
with that.
Enrollment
so,
for
right.
the year.
I mean, and to answer your question, if, let's say, you were to ask us what our current enrollment is right now based on the courses that we are have our students enrolled in and the classes enrolled in, that number would be 5,650 students because that is what we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the students who are currently attending our schools and that are enrolled in our classes here. So,
okay.
of course, we have students who go to private schools. We have students... any student who is coming into our school as a cross-contract student from another school district that they're paying for or parents are paying tuition, those students are included in that 5,650 number. Because that is what helps us to set our class sizes, especially at the elementary
mm-hmm.
level,
yeah.
Based on those enrollments and what
right.
our projected enrollment would be.
And if you remember our last meeting, that number was 5,651.
Right.
So it changes
mm-hmm.
week
okay.
to week.
Right.
But just like so, when they do state aid, though, one of the numbers that the state determines is called average daily attendance, right? So if we would have very poor attendance, it theoretically could affect our state aid, but I don't mean low attendance like, okay, this year we averaged 97%, last year we averaged 98%. I don't know of any districts that have, I don't even know what the number would need to get to. It would probably need to get down into the 80s or 70% before it would start actually affecting
okay.
state aid. But average, so that's it. But that's another one now too. So there's, and the state uses all these different ones. So if you look up on the state aid website, you see all these different numbers. And it's not, well, this is wrong, that's wrong. It's all different kind of things.
Right.
And then when you get the state aid, they have things. They have a number they call total aidable pupil units, which is a whole different kind of number.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway,
it's not
so
that clear.
So it's
yeah.
it's So that's why I say, well, it's not always just one number. I mean, we'll give you one number, our enrollment on the bed day of each of those years.
Okay, as long as it's stated like that, then
yeah.
We'll
and
understand.
And then that way it's consistent
year
to year,
too. If you look at the chart there where it says student enrollment, you can see that. That is reflective of beds data.
Okay.
That's what
does
we
that
use.
Include the academy and preschool?
Yes, it does not include preschool. It includes school-age children. It does not include our preschool.
Can we see, like, the roll-up to that number? By grade, building?
Yeah, broken out?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the
sure.
Way
mm-hmm.
I think it would be good also to have that number that you said, but also to be maybe a separate line item for the kids that are out of district, because mm-hmm. we are still paying them.
Yes.
People need to understand that this money
mm-hmm.
is
right.
So maybe not included in the number that's going to the state, but I would add that in there because that is part of the budget, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, those
sure.
students are absolutely part of the part
okay,
of the budget.
So maybe just give us two, whatever the 5,000 change, and then two.
Or
out of
district students.
See,
Karen. Some of our students who are in out-of-district placements are not just in out-of-district placements. They're dual-enrolled here
right.
and in out-of-district. So
right.
we'll have to make sure that we're not duplicating that count.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Just
thank
one tech question. The DOC, I don't know, you got a little something on the web page?
Sure.
Testing. Okay. No, I could hear myself perfectly fine. Just if there could be some little section on like I was on a bunch of different district websites and they do have information about the budget advisory committee, like who's on it and what the goal.
Sure, and
is.
We'll be posting
yeah.
the minutes on there too.
That'd be great. Yeah.
I just wanted to give so everybody got the minutes. If you just read them over when you at your leisure over the next day or two,
yep.
If you see anything that you think is incorrect, let me know. We'll fix it, and then we'll post those as we go.
I just have a question. Sorry, it's not for you, Laura. So it's more related to this information you gave us. So all of these people who are listed on here are considered district admins?
Yes.
Okay, so I've never seen all of these people's names ever reflected on the website, so I never knew that they all existed. So the chair people, they're in the administrative unit.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
They teach.
Oh, they do teach.
They
yes.
do teach. They
some
have a teaching
teach,
load.
Right. Some of them at the junior high school will teach three classes, and at the high school two classes, and it depends on each individual person. And our special ed chairperson does not teach at all.
Okay. So this would just be my personal preference that the website will be reflected of this because as a parent, I'm looking at it as we pay an assistant superintendent, we pay an executive director. Who is handling our math, our science, our English? I had no idea that we had this. So I really think to be transparent, instead of everyone thinking that we just have this top layer and then the people on the bottom, that we need to understand that there's people in between. So there is somebody that is responsible for our math and our English in the middle school, the junior high, at the high school. So I just think that in order to be transparent, that needs to be very public.
So you don't want to just see Cheryl and then everyone else.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Are these all of the people that are in the administrative contract?
Yeah, well, it includes people. Well, not everyone's in the administrator's contract. For instance, Cheryl, myself, the other two assistant superintendents, and the executive director of HR and secondary curriculum are not in a union.
How about the chair people?
The
yes.
chair people are members of the administrator's union.
Okay.
Administrative union.
Yes. They
so, do they teach the ones?
That's what they were just saying.
Yes.
Yeah,
they
do.
Do
here or there.
Teach, yeah.
Okay.
The majority of them teach.
And they... Those are all the people that are in the administrative union. There's no other people that are in the administrative union.
Right. This is the complete
administrators
union plus those of us that don't belong
that
to
are,
the union.
Right.
Right.
Non-union.
This is all administrators in the district.
That's all the administrators.
There aren't others that were, right.
So are there others that fill administrative roles but are not in the administrative union?
Well, I think that goes to the next question. So just looking at the teacher's contract and looking at the board minutes, I noticed that there's a lot of people that are getting lead teacher stipends. Mm-hmm. So to give an example, we appointed a lead teacher for pre-K. Now, as far as I know, we only have like a handful of pre-K people in this entire district. So that to me, as a budget perspective, looks a little wasteful. So going through this, I don't see any set number of lead teachers. So can we have a number of how many lead teachers mm-hmm. in the district? We need to know, like, there's one for reading, one for first grade, one for second grade. Are they every building? Are they just district-wide? I think that helps right. to paint a better picture of really where money goes.
Right.
Go ahead.
So,
can you add on that? What union they're part of?
They're teachers.
The leads are not they are not released from teaching responsibilities at all. They get a stipend to bring together, especially with regard to if we look at our pre-K. There's one pre-K teacher in each building, so they're a singleton within their building. So the opportunity to come together and meet and having one lead teacher is sometimes very advantageous for us to do it that way.
All right. Do you mm-hmm. just happen to know in this contract, is there anywhere where there's a description of what a lead teacher does?
No. The lead teacher description would be with HR. It would not be there. Right.
All right. So it doesn't say in here that we have to have as many as we have, but... No. Okay, do we just need to look and see how many? That's just one of the things.
We could get you a list of the current lead teachers just in pre-K through 12.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Just one question. Is there a lead teacher per grade? I know the kindergarten is only a section in each building, so there's one. But is there a lead teacher in every grade in every building?
No.
There's just one lead teacher for the whole fourth grade.
There is no lead teachers in any of the grades, elementary grades.
Okay. No.
There are no lead teachers.
What about the Title I reading? There's a Title reading teacher, lead teachers?
Right. There are some of those that we would. Right. So we would get you that information.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But there isn't like a social studies. There are two social studies lead teachers, but there are no math lead teachers. I mean, the structure is put in place based on the needs of the district and how we administer and supervise. Mm-hmm. But they don't do observations. They are in no position. They are teachers. They are peers. Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, like social studies leads there at the junior highs because we don't have chairs.
We have one chair at the high school.
Right. I mean, no, but don't have chairs at the junior
We do house. Not have chairs right. at the junior high school, but in the other areas, we do.
Right.
Like in math and English and science, mm-hmm. we have chairs.
Mm-hmm. I don't mean to beat a dead horse.
That's okay.
Just the superintendent, deputy superintendent, and assistant superintendents are non-union administrators. Everybody else is.
Also the executive director of HR.
Yeah, they
Alan
just
Baum.
Moved this one out.
Which one?
That one. They just moved him out of the union.
He is not in a union.
They took him out.
It's because of confidentiality, and he has to do investigations that may involve administrators, so it would not be appropriate for him to remain in the unit.
Any other questions about that?
I have a question regarding the preschools fall under the building that they're in. So those school building principals oversee the preschools that are in them? Or do they
That's one layer is the building principal. But Deanna Rinaldi, who is our elementary director of curriculum, she also oversees the pre-K program from a district level. But the building principals in the buildings on a daily basis, everyday basis, they're part of the community, the school community. And there is supervision at that level. But the direct supervision is at the district level.
Okay. And is that the same for the academy? Who oversees that?
Gus Huber is the principal of the academy. And the academy isn't really a standalone. We consider it a satellite to the high school, but Gus Huber is the principal, and there are right now, I believe, 51 students at the academy.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else on that? Anything else for Laura before she leaves?
I mean, Laura's saying she's willing to stay.
Okay. All right. Well,
she's willing
Well,
we're talking about data.
She loves data. She loves data. She's really wonderful. So we're very fortunate.
You're not going to love it after my request.
Yeah. All right. So the tax cap, we're just waiting for one piece of information from BOCES, but it looks like it's going to be right at 2% for us this year. You probably know, it could vary from year to year and district to district. It looks like for us it will be right at 2%, the cap. We have no intention of going above the cap. That's that. We'll be discussing.
Is the cap a goal for you, though?
Well, here's what I would say. As we go through the numbers, and we'll see, I don't think there will be enough where we could say, certainly if we cut some positions, right? And it might turn out that, hey, we don't even need to go to the cap in order to pay for everything in the budget. It's possible. And, I wouldn't automatically say, yeah, we have to go out at the cap. If we can still put a solid budget together to pay for everything that you included, recommend and the board wants, and if the board says, yeah, we're okay with, based on enrollment, we can go down, X number of instructional positions, we can reduce that, and we don't need to go up to the 2%, that's okay. Yeah, if it can come in below that, that'd be great. I don't know if that's the case yet, and that's as the budget, as we develop the budget and go along, we'll see. If we can do that, great. Keep in mind, we have to start paying our reserves back this year, too. I want to talk a little bit more about, there was a request for reserves, and I want to talk a little bit about that, too. Sorry. Yes, ma'am.
I just thought, before we go more into budget, I just thought of one more question. I noticed in the board minutes that there's also, contracted services, and I believe it's two different people for security for the district. Are they considered administrators to the district?
We have one that's a one. We used to have a second one.
Okay.
We have one now.
And
he's not an administrator in the district. We pay his, actually we pay his company, but and that's to oversee our whole security department. He's retired Suffolk County Police Department. Lots of contacts with the police, FBI. He does a lot of training for the police, fire departments, for FRES, which is Fire Rescue Emergency Services. He's connected with the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI, wealth of knowledge, and we pay his company to oversee our security as far as not the day-to-day operations of our security, but our overall posture. Some of you may have know of him. His name is Jack Blaum. He knows more about, all of that kind of stuff than really anyone else. Right.
That doesn't mean that does it have a time where, is he a full-time employee in the district, or is that just kind of a consultant come and go? Because I also noticed there were lead guards that get an extra $5,000. There were coordinators. So there's all these extra things. So I'm just curious how.
Right. He's here a lot, especially, and he's always on call. We can get a hold of him nights, weekends, anytime we need. The day-to-day operations, we have, his name is Tony Tucci, he kind of runs the day-to-day operations. At the high school, there's a lead security guard. There are definitely layers of supervision, absolutely, like in any organization. And at the high school, there's a lot of security guards at the high school. It's a big building. We have lead security guards there. It's like a store might have, a manager, an assistant manager, a general manager to oversee all of them. Same kind of thing, because we might have a couple of leads at the high school because they may not both be there every single day, kind of thing. So the tax cap, it looks like the cap, will, it looks like will be right at 2%. As I said, I'm just waiting for something from BOCES on that, a piece of information. But the what they call the levy growth factor, that's when you hear the tax cap of 2%, the law regarding the tax cap that says it can be up to 2% based on the increase in CPI, Consumer Price Index, that's the levy growth factor. It can't be more than 2%, but it can be less. This year, because CPI was running at, I don't know, 4.7 or whatever it was, percent, our cap, school's cap for this year is 2% in that piece. There are some years where, based on other factors, it can be higher or lower, but in our case for this year, it doesn't look like any of those really will affect it, so it looks like our cap will be right at 2%. That's, we have to build that into the budget and stay under that cap to build back reserves, yes. So if you want to talk about reserves, we'll remember, last year we spent a lot of money to keep schools open every day. We were one of the few schools anywhere, not just on Long Island or in Suffolk County, anywhere, that had kids in school every day, K to 12, 5 days a week from September, the first day in September through June. It cost a lot of money. We were talking about that going back to the summer of 2020, and the message we had heard from the community, with especially those with kids in school, was, hey, listen, if you have money in reserves and you can spend some of that and get our kids in school, do it. That was the message we heard, and we did that. We spent a lot of money on it, and it came from our reserves. There was special legislation passed by the New York State Legislature and signed by the governor that allowed us to pull money from reserves to use for COVID-related expenses. And that's what we did. Part of the legislation allowing that, though, was that we had to pay back those reserves. So we have to start doing that this coming up year, this year that we're working on the budget for. But what that also did, and every year the state comptroller's office does they have what they call a fiscal stress monitoring system. I'm sure you saw it in Newsday. And that gives, it's a point system based on a number of factors. And what generated points for us this year was the use of reserves. Our unreserved, it's really called unassigned, fund balance, being that it was between 2 and 3%, generated points. Our total fund balance as a percent, because it was less than 10% of total expenditures, that generated some points. Every year we, like most districts, do what's called a tax anticipation note. We don't start collecting property taxes until January. So we have to have cash to get us from July through December until we start getting that money in. The more we have, not just us, the more any district has in reserve, the less need there is to borrow money to get through that, you know, from a cash flow standpoint, to get through that time. So as we use more and more of our reserves, we had to increase how much we borrowed to get through that time. And it's as I said, it's called tax anticipation note. The borrowing is done at the beginning of the school year and gets paid back at the end of the school year. So because we increased that amount, that generated points for us as well. So if you add the points together that we got, we came out to 26.7 points out of 100. Anything 25% points to 25 to 44.9, I think it is under 25 is no designation. That's what we normally have, no designation. Anything from 25 points to 44.9 puts us at the level of susceptible to fiscal stress, and that's where we are because we had the 26.7 points. And then above the 45 points to whatever, I forget, is moderate, under moderate fiscal stress, and then whatever that next number up to 100 is under significant fiscal stress. So we're, because we use the reserves, which put our unassigned fund balance between 2 and 3%, it comes out to 2.25%, because it was between 2 and 3, we generated 8.33 points for that. Because our total fund balance is under 10% of our total expenditures, that was also 8.33 percent points, and increase in our tax anticipation note, we went from 28 million to 32 million because that was more than 10% increase. It generated 10 points. So he had those things together, came out to 26.7, and that puts us at susceptible to fiscal stress. Meaning, okay, if you keep heading that way, using reserves, you're going to run into a problem in the future. And that's what we've been saying. That was part of you know, the whole thing was, okay, we could take the money from reserves, but we're going to have to pay it back. That was part of our rationale for going above the tax cap last year also. And that's what we talked about at the time was, so we can start paying our reserves back. If this were to happen again with COVID, and we were going to do the same thing, we'd need that money back in reserves. Now, what I would ask you, and this has ties directly in with budget, if there was sentiment among you as a committee, and then we would actually ask our community, the whole community, to weigh in too. If it were to happen again, where schools start closing down, and schools, because if you don't know, if you remember, I don't know how much you pay attention to what was going on in other school districts last year, was a lot of school districts. Most school districts did not have their kids in school 5 days. Lots of them had kids only attend twice a week, maybe 2 days this week, 3 days next week, and vice versa, and, you know, alternate like that. And it cost us a lot of money to do what we did. If your recommendation is, should there be some other variant of COVID come and schools start closing down again, that we should not do that or not spend the money and just close down and do the 2 days a week, then, you know, if that's what the community wants, I mean, it's your money. What we had heard from the community going back to summer of 2020 was do what you need to do to keep schools open, and that's what we did. It cost a lot of money. But if the sentiment is, no, don't do that, I'm not going to show it to you because I wouldn't want to share information from another district, but I had gotten an email last year, it was in March, from a counterpart of mine in a district nearby. He was asking me questions about something. All right, so I was helping him with something. So then he said that in his district, I said, oh, by the way, good luck with the budget, you know, going above the tax cap. I said, yeah, you know, it costs a lot to keep our schools open this year. He said to me that in his district, he held spending so tight that, now this was in March of last year, he has to open up spending because he's going to have too much left over. So my thinking is, well, I wouldn't want to be a taxpayer in that district. So I'm paying taxes to you, and instead of spending the money and getting our kids in school 5 days a week, because in that district, the kids were coming to school twice a week, they're socking that money away. In fact, he told me in the previous 5 years, he built up fund balance there by $60 million. I think that's awful. I would never do something like that. I wouldn't want my tax money to go to something like that. Why should me or you or any of us pay? We all pay a lot of taxes. Pay that money in tax for a school district to just say, well, we're going to take it and we're just going to sock it away and sock away $60 million.
So is this unassigned fund balance? Is there a target that we need to be at?
Well, it depends. For years and years and years and years, forever, ever, 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 it was 2% was the most we could have in unassigned. It used to be called unreserved, undesignated, but now it's called unassigned. It used to be 2%. And then about, I don't know, was that 15, closer to 20 maybe? I forget how many years ago. It went up to 4%. Went to 3% and then to 4%. Yep. So we can have up to 4% in that unassigned. We have 2.25% right now. The comptroller, the fiscal stress monitoring thing, says if you have less than 3%, it's going to generate points. That doesn't mean that's the magic number. Right. That's just what generates points.
But where do we want to be?
I mean, ultimately, I would like it to be back closer to 4%.
Yep.
Because that's the true rainy day fund, the unassigned. The other reserves are in place for specific reasons. And when it came to COVID, that's what we needed to tap. That unassigned plus some of our assigned fund balances is what we had to tap into in order to keep schools open. But I would ask you, I mean, that's just a request from us to you as a committee, maybe make that part of your ultimate recommendation to the board, you know, about the budget and, you know, do this, do the, you know, cut this, add that, whatever, whatever your ultimate recommendations are going to be. But I would ask you if you can also make a recommendation that should COVID hit again and schools all over start going back to those, you know, hybrid schedules with kids attending twice a week, if you'd prefer we do that to save the money and not spend it for more reserves, then, or vice versa. If you say, you know what you did last, it should it happen. Of course, we hope it never happens again. But should it happen again, do the same thing as last year, then I mean, I think that would be helpful for the board to know what the sentiment of the community is.
I'd like to clarify just to make sure I got something right, because it's understood, right? You had to go into reserves for the 2020-2021 school year. It's an unusual year. Was it tapping into reserves and borrowing money? Because at one point you mentioned the two kind of balance each other sometimes.
Well, so the more we have in reserves, so when
then you don't need to
borrow. 30th, right? So now the new school year starts. The more we have in reserves, the more we have in cash.
Sure.
The more we have in cash, the less we have to borrow to get through the
system. Right, it's a cushion to get you
so
over.
So because part of the reason for, the reason for increasing the amount, it's called a TAN, the tax anticipation note, increasing the TAN in the summer of 20 was because of the cash that we had in fund balance and reserves as of June 30th of 2020. Mm-hmm. We were going to be using more of that in the months leading up to January when taxes would start coming in, because we hired 37 COVID teachers. We called them COVID teachers. We were hiring so many more people that weren't budgeted for, and we had to pull money from reserves.
But was there tapping into reserves and borrowing money outside of reserves, or was there enough in reserves to avoid having to borrow?
Well, the borrowing the money is from the cash flow standpoint.
That's every year, right?
Okay.
That's every year.
That's
just from a cash flow standpoint.
Not any external borrowing beyond.
No, not like we need money.
Right,
because
then I'm thinking you're paying interest on top of that.
It's just like a short term.
It's a short term. Yep. It's borrowed and paid back within that same fiscal year.
But it's customarily you use the reserves for that. To get to January, you use the reserves. Is that what normally happens?
Well, somewhat, but we always have a tax anticipation note.
Right.
There are some districts that don't because they have so much in reserves, they don't need to.
Okay.
Some districts do that.
So I just have a couple of questions regarding this, and I also would like to circle back to about what you were just talking about the comptroller. What was the total amount that was pulled? You're saying that you're pulling from the reserves. What is this amount of money that you pulled?
The amount that we spent from reserves was, I forget the exact dollar amount.
Well,
it was $5 million and change. We spent a little over $7 million on COVID-related expenses.
Okay, so the $2 million you got from
$2 million. Well, there was money in the budget that we could use. You know, like in the last school year, we didn't have field trips.
Okay.
Right? So there was money in the budget for field trips. So
definitely.
That can go to
There's a lot of things in there. Like all that travel comp. What is that? The travel?
Travel comp. We didn't have any of those last year. Right.
So
all of that money that was in the budget that could have been used, well, we didn't use for that, helped to offset the $7 million in COVID expenses.
Okay. And then my next question is, when does, you keep saying, and I heard you say this last year, it needs to be paid back. What is the date it needs to be paid back by?
So of the $5 million that we took from reserves, ultimately, my opinion, which is nothing more than my opinion, is we should pay back all of that.
Right.
But what we did with our auditors was, we charged of the $5 million, we were able to charge $3 million of that to our what's called a retirement contribution reserve, right? So we were actually able to, that was the amount that we had to pay to the employees' retirement system last year, roughly $3 million. So we were able to charge that expense to that reserve, right? So it technically does not have to be repaid. From a fiscal stability standpoint, it should get repaid over time. But as far as the special legislation is concerned, it doesn't have it's not required to be repaid within a specific amount of time.
So
the other $2 million, though, has to be repaid over no more than 5 years.
Okay.
beginning with this coming up year, and it has to be at least 20% a year. So it can't be like, well, we're not going to pay anything for the first 4 years and then pay the whole $2 million last year. So we'll have to pay back at least $400,000 of it each of until it's paid back,
okay.
Each year until it's paid back.
Okay. And just circling back to what you were saying about the comptroller's report, I mean, it was not great to see that as
the
a community
stress.
Member, the fiscal, saying that we're,
yeah.
you know, in
sure.
a...
Yeah.
But
so it's what we've
but
been
beyond
saying
that,
since last year.
Beyond yeah. that, I have three things I want to ask you.
Okay.
In this organization chart here, it lists claims auditor, internal auditor, independent auditor. So those are three things I'd like you to define, and then I'd like to understand, because part of what they were saying in that report not only had to do with this, it also had to do with, not handling of money and how money was handling. And I'm not accusing anybody of anything
that's
or anything like that.
I don't mind. That's
but
all right.
I just want to say there's two separate reports you're
talking
about.
Yeah, those
about.
Are two
one,
separate reports.
One was the comptroller's
fiscal stress.
The other was the auditor's.
Right. They're both
the comptroller.
Okay. Comptroller. But the fiscal stress was the thing about the use of reserves.
Right. Okay,
that.
But then when we – okay, so when
the
we look at the other one,
report.
That's another
yeah.
not such a great thing.
Right.
So I'm just trying to understand why – what these auditors do, and also why are they still working for us?
The auditors?
Yeah. What, I mean, like, who was paying attention to what was being done and handled?
Well, they all were. So just so you know, so in the comptroller's report, the comptroller's audit, they were here for more than 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
They had a team of auditors here for more than 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't find one single improper payment, not an incorrect payment, not one single thing.
Right.
Now, part of me says, well, they can't spend, to have a team of auditors spend more than 2 years working on an audit and say, oh, we couldn't find anything. So to say, so what they said was, well, you know, the one, I forget, the $43 million, well, most of that was repayment of that $28 million tax anticipation note. So the tax anticipation note, so here's the people. So first of all, because it's an official, we're a governmental unit. We're not a nonprofit. We're a governmental unit. So when governments borrow, all right, so the IRS is involved. The Securities Exchange Commission is involved. We have our district's attorney is involved. We have a separate bond counsel, which is a major Wall Street law firm involved. We have a fiscal advisor involved. There are a lot of official reports have to be filed. When we're actually making the payment, it goes to the depository trust company. Our treasurer is involved. Our director of business services is involved. Myself, our external auditor, and our internal auditor. So what the comptroller's office said is, well, maybe you should have the accounts payable clerk enter that in instead of the treasurer. And we said, well, why? And they said, well, just to have somebody else involved. I can't argue that. I can't say no. Okay, is that going to make things better? Okay, so they put that in their report. But then that's the way they say it. Then they send it up to Albany, and their team of writers says, oh, there was lack of oversight. I disagree. There was not lack of oversight. There's plenty of oversight, but they can't. They can't. Oh, by the way, at the also at the exit conference that we had with the comptroller's auditors, they said, we had a great staff. They said, you guys are doing a great job. I said, well, does that go in the report? No, we're not allowed to put that in the report. Okay. So I take a lot of exception to the findings of the report. But like I said, to say, well, someone else could have, another person could have been involved with the payment of it. Okay. I mean, I can't say no, there should not be, but I don't know really what it really, how it improves anything. So we just said, okay, fine. So we do it that
so
way.
So you
now.
Just, you were decided on that one thing? That's it? That's the only
thing? Well, that was one of them. The request for proposals for audit services And the audits are random that the comptroller's office does. And they're supposed to do every school district at least once every 5 years, those kind of audits. And the last time we had one was the 5 years was up on our external auditor. But they had changed. It was a different firm. One firm took over the other firm. And I said to the auditor at the time, since it's a different firm, do we have to do a new request for proposals for that? He said, it's a different firm. He said, is there a different team? I said, it's all different people. It's a different firm, different team. He said, then you don't need to do it. The auditor that was here this time said, well, no, you should still do it. Okay, so they put in there that we didn't do it. All right, fine. So we did it now over 2 years ago. That was done. Most of those things in those reports were done 2 years ago. And a lot of what's in there, though, has to do with segregation of duties, which is okay, but it means, in their opinion, we should have more people doing it. So, okay, but that means hiring more people. So, you know, it gets to the point where it's just not practical.
That was going to be our recommendation, to hire more administrators.
Yeah. I knew that was going to be part of your thing, that you agree with the comptroller that we should hire more administrators. No. And you know what? No. We don't want to do that just because – and, in fact, the comptroller said the supervisor who was at the thing said, by the way, we're not saying you have to do these things. These are just suggestions. Okay. So – but I don't think it would be responsible of us to say – well, we have to hire five more people in between the business office and HR, so we can segregate duties more and more and more. And the reason we have people who, and when they say, well, so this person didn't need access to that. Well, they do, because even though they're working in maybe Cheryl's office, they still help out in HR occasionally for stuff, so they need access to that. But when the auditor comes in and says, well, no, somebody in the superintendent's office doesn't need access to something that's in HR, well, okay, but that would mean hiring someone else in HR to do what they're doing. So it's not very practical either to simply say, well, let's take everything they said and now add more people because of it to segregate the duties. In fact, it says in the report about segregation of duties or implement compensating controls if not practical, if segregating duties is not practical. So we pointed that out. So, well, we have all these other compensated controls in place. And they said, well, but that's only if it's not practical. You could hire more people. Okay, so it's, you know, we can't argue that. And then even things that we pointed out, and by the way, at the exit conference we had, and we had the draft of the report, the lead auditor wasn't even there. And the things that we pointed out, they said they would go back, and they never reviewed. No.
Can I ask a question?
The information that we're getting that we should not pay attention to it?
No, I'm not saying you shouldn't pay attention to it. But they found there was no instance. I mean, what I was happy about, not that I was surprised. I mean, I knew it would be the case. There was no instances of, well, you did this wrong. There was incorrect payments here. That was improper. That's what I mean. There was none of that. So it was all procedural and things like, you know. Okay, could the floor could have been swept, you know, twice today instead of once today.
Were any of the points in that letter also regarding internal controls? Because it sounds like it was totally internal control type of issues. Were any of those also mentioned in any management letters from your independent auditors?
No.
So are these best practices, documented best practices that they believe you should be following?
Well, we are now. Because we're not going to argue. We're not going to do is argue with the comptroller's office either. So they say we should. We're not going to hire more people. Well, we hired an accountant. We hired a CPA.
Okay.
An experienced school district auditor. And by the way, and started actually with starting with the board, but then to Cheryl and then to me, told her, she was an experienced school district auditor too. Anything you think should get changed, you have full authority from Cheryl to tell anyone, you need to change that. And that goes for us, too. If she thinks we're doing something that could be better, then let us know.
When was this?
Is that an independent CPA?
When was this?
Oh, we just hired her this past year.
Okay. Is that independent or is she an employee?
She is an employee.
So she's an
she works for us. Yeah. Yeah.
And that was recommended by both the internal and external
yes.
auditor.
Yes. Yeah.
You didn't have an internal auditor before?
We have an internal auditor, but the internal auditor is a separate CPA firm. They come in every couple of weeks, and they pick different areas to go through and look at, including all of our internal controls.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the major things that they look at.
Yeah.
And in their the internal auditor, the external auditor that does our annual financial reports and financial statement, that's a different independent CPA firm, and our claims auditor is a third independent CPA firm. Mm-hmm. The claims auditor reviews all of our disbursements. They come in every 2 weeks when we do a check run. They come in and they go through every single disbursement.
The claims auditor comes in and looks at every single disbursement.
Yes.
Every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks. Yeah. They have a team of people that come in and do that. Yes.
Do you need to file CAPS for that?
Say that again.
Corrective action plans for what was in the report?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah,
As soon as it's finished, we review it with the board. Yeah, we'll post it on the website, too.
And when you were talking about the financial stress situation, do you think you could type up some bullets on exactly what you said? Because that was very interesting.
Sure.
Yeah. I think that would be
funny you should say that.
Actually, we will be posting something to the website with that, and Jeff can share that out with the BSC.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
So regarding the financial stress, what I don't understand is, given that we were close to the edge here, there seem to have been multiple hires this year, which presumably were what pushed us over the edge. Why make those hires?
What made it higher this
Why
year?
Why make those hires and push us over, which gives us a small but definite reputational hit?
So I'm not sure I understand the question. So
you say job posts were filled that shouldn't have been necessarily filled. You're talking about new hires, right?
I'm talking about new hires this year, which presumably were what put us over the edge here.
But I'm not sure what you mean by put us over the edge.
Gave us the score above 25, I think it was.
Oh. Oh, well, it wasn't the new. Well, it was the people. It was all the. I mean, it wasn't just most of the additional money that we spent last year for COVID-related reasons. Most of it went towards additional instructional staff, and that was to make class sizes smaller, so we could have 6 foot distancing within the classrooms.
We also, because there were teacher shortage in certain areas, and to make the students 6 feet apart, some of our teachers took on a sixth class. So that was very expensive for the district to do. But in order to get our class sizes lower, that's what the district did. For the remote elementary school, we hired about 30 additional teachers. And those were COVID teachers, so they were paid very differently. But that was to allow a remote elementary school to be in place.
So did you anticipate that there would be this risk that we might get flagged as in this risk category?
As what category?
Was there an anticipation
we
would
susceptible,
actually?
Well, that's going to stay with us for a few years.
No,
that's,
right, but was that anticipated?
When you expecting that based on the.
Oh, sure.
Right. So last year when you were saying this costs us a lot of money and this is why we're going above the tax cap, we didn't go above the tax cap, you had to hire all those teachers. We were putting ourselves in financial stress last year trying to get the kids back into school, right? Is that how I can understand it?
Yeah, but keep in mind, that doesn't say we're under fiscal stress. It says we're susceptible to.
I get it.
Right.
So, and they make that designate.
Does that impact?
I'm not trying to.
So having that thing just come out in the day last week, that wasn't incredibly surprising.
No, not at all.
Right, that's, I think, what we're trying to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah, does that increase our cost of debt at all? Does it?
Not really. The only thing we borrow now, and maybe the committee wants to recommend we do a construction bond and do some fun projects. No, I'm kidding. The only thing we borrow is that tax anticipation note every year.
Yeah.
And the rates that we pay are super low. So it could affect credit rating. That's more of a long-term thing. But other than the tax anticipation, though, I don't foresee us doing a bond anytime in the next, I don't know how many years.
What is our credit rating?
AA2.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is as high as we're going to get given our tax base.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some districts in very wealthy areas, and now keep in mind, you know, we have some very wealthy areas of Three Village, but the district as a whole isn't incredibly wealthy. There are some districts that are just super wealthy and they have AAA ratings.
So just, I guess, back to what
David was asking. Were there any, like, an exorbitant amount of new hires this current year?
No, we have less people this year than we had last
year.
And
I don't know if that's what she was asking, but I wanted to be clear on that. Because
with the exception of the health teachers, that's new. And the auditor.
I'm not saying we didn't hire anyone, though. We have less people than we had last year.
We hired new people in certain areas, but let go of people in other areas. So.
Yeah, so like the COVID, what we called the COVID teachers, they were the additional teachers that we brought in last year, and they were paid on the teacher salary scale, but at the lowest rate. It didn't matter what they're, because if you, well, when
you
look
go
at
by the steps and all
it
that.
Didn't go, they were all step one, it didn't matter if they had experience somewhere else, and it didn't matter if they had a master's degree or if they got paid at the bachelor's step one level, those COVID teachers, and they didn't get benefits either. Of course, we had to pay Social Security, but they didn't get any health insurance for the year. And they were not probationary positions, and other than, I don't know, maybe a couple of them that we wound up hiring as a regular probationary teacher to fill a vacancy from a retiree or something like that, we don't have those people anymore.
Can I just ask one question about the schools and the closures? And this school stayed open and was open full-time for kids, which is great. Were there any other districts on Long Island that did that same thing? Do you know any other districts that were open full-time for kids besides Three Village?
Shoreham Wading River.
Yeah, Shoreham.
Okay. So are they in the same fiscal stress that we are?
I don't know. I don't know.
Were they on the list?
They weren't on the list.
And there could be a number of reasons why. Maybe they didn't use as much from reserves. I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know what.
Maybe they passed their budget.
That could be. It could be that. I don't know. It could be, there's a lot of reasons it could be. It could be that they had enough in reserves where they pulled money out of reserves and it didn't put them. Because put us in the fiscal stress, as far as the comptroller's thing goes, is not, well, how much of reserves did you use? It's how much do you have now? Mm-hmm. And because we have between 2% and 3% unassigned, it gave us the points. If we didn't increase our tax anticipation, no. We would have had, because as it turned out, between those three things, what percent of expenditures do we have in unassigned fund balance? What percent of total expenditures do we have in total fund balance and increase in the tax anticipation note? Those three areas combined came out to 26.7 points. If it came out to 24.9 points, we would have had no designation. So if any one of those three we didn't have, or the tax anticipation note was, I forget what the breakdown was, but a lower level than the 10%, we would have had no designation also. So
So given that you knew you were going to end up on this list, wouldn't that have been the trigger to say, well, we're going to have to start cutting back?
And, well, and you mean and not keep schools open?
But at some point, if you're going to end up on this list, which says that you're in financial stress.
Well, it doesn't say we're in financial stress.
Wouldn't that be the time to start saying, well, we need to cut back. This is going to be our plan to cut back expenditures.
Well, I mean, I can't say no, we should not have done that, but I wouldn't say, well, would that have been the reason to say, well, we don't want the comptroller next year to put us on the susceptible to fiscal stress list, so let's not keep schools open 5 days a week.
I guess to be clear with what he's, I guess what you're asking is, the reason, if we had not had COVID and it was a normal year and there wasn't all those, we didn't have to dip into the funds to keep schools open like we did,
uh-huh.
we would not have been on that list.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Not.
I think that's
yeah. They do this list every year. We've never been on it.
Exactly.
Year.
So
right.
And that
but
you're on that list based on last
on
year. But we're based, that came out this year based on what we did last year. It's not
right.
like currently. It's not like you could say, well, we're going to be on this list, so we need to cut it. Let's cut things now. Like,
right.
this is all from
right?
last
yeah.
year.
Right. But keep in mind, as I said, though, we are going to be on this list for at least a couple more years. I don't know about a couple. At least one more year
until it's all rectified.
Start paying those reserves back.
Got it.
Yes.
And
okay.
It's based on data as of December 31st, 2021.
Right. So now with the reserves, so we need to pay back $400,000 every year for the next 5 years.
Right.
What would you be comfortable with really paying back to get the reserves up and running?
Good question. That's a good question.
Well, I would say, I mean, this is where, you know, there's a lot of discussion that would need to take place, including here. Are you, and it will be as we get a little further along in putting all the numbers together in the budget, and we would have to have a discussion with the board. Would the board say, well, instead of adding whatever program, I don't know, whatever, instead of adding these two programs that would have cost us $200,000, let's not, and let's increase the amount that we could pay back to fund reserves.
Right.
It's not.
No, and I think that's going to be an important discussion. Because,
yeah.
I mean,
we have to pay back the 400.
Our reserves need to
right.
back up because, God forbid, something happens again. You want to have that flexibility to use
to
as much
put
as
us
you
back
need.
In full time. Because
right.
I do think the community would not want to go part time.
No.
I wouldn't think so either.
Again,
right.
The community is going to expect that we go back like we did.
Of course.
Okay. So
that's, yeah. Well, I would think that,
yeah.
but that's, I mean, I would think that people would, they're not going to be worried about, well, does the comptroller say we're susceptible to fiscal stress? Yeah, but we don't want that, so we're gonna go to a hybrid schedule.
But I think if you explain it, like when you said, and you're going to put that on the website, we can talk about that and explain it a little bit more. Just
yeah.
seeing the report come out, it wasn't a good thing.
Right.
Because
yeah.
nobody knew why we were and what happened and what year it was for. I think once it gets explained, at least we could talk to that, and that would be fine.
Right.
But I don't think anybody, at least in my circles that I talked to, would ever not want school to be open 5 days a week.
Well, that's what I would think,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
So this
you're
is
not,
something of a
you're
hypothetical
gonna,
here,
you,
though. I mean, there's no sense that COVID's coming back at that level. I still want to go back to this stress thing here. I mean, normally that would trigger a freezing hire. If you're getting a report from the state saying you're under fiscal stress, that would immediately trigger a freezing hire in lots of places.
The report said that they're susceptible to Hello? Fiscal stress, not that they're under it.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I understand what it said.
Distinction.
Yes.
It's an important
but
distinction.
Doesn't that ring a bell at some point? We say, well, we're not on the right path here. We've got to implement a freezing hire.
Or we could go above the tax cap and try to replenish the reserves, which we tried, right? Budget failed.
Uh-huh.
I've been saying since summer of 2020, this is costing a lot of money. I've been blue in the face about how much money it was costing us to keep schools open, and it's biggest reason why no other very few districts anywhere did it. It wasn't anything that magical happened here. It was a lot of work, but not that we're crying about that, but it cost a lot of money too. And we did that to keep schools open.
Okay.
So
what would
I mean,
trigger
I still think if we had a discussion with the board halfway through last year and said, you know, maybe we should consider a hybrid because it's using too much of our fund balance and reserves. Now, here's one thing, too, and I heard this from a lot of people. Well, If you're not going to use the reserve, and I agree with it, I agree wholeheartedly with this statement. If you're not going to use the reserves now, what do you even have them for? That's a good point.
No one's arguing that you shouldn't
use the reserves.
That
wasn't a good thing, and that you know that they're upset by how it panned out in the end, that we were all able to go to school, whether you know people wanted their children in school full time or home full time. I think the question now is, is there a way to cut expenditures so that we don't have to go as far over, you know, increasing the tax rate for the next budget rather than just increasing the taxes? Is there something else that we can streamline? Is there something else that we can take a look at to
offset some
of that?
Sure, and I think that's like where all the requests that we talked about earlier will come into play. Now, first of all, we have a number of teachers retiring this year. Do we need to replace them all? Well, we won't need to replace them all. How many we need to replace, we don't know exactly yet. But even that, maybe where, like, again, where this the class size, you know, information and the all the electives and all that kind of stuff, maybe class size gets increased a little bit. I don't mean put 30 kids in a class. I'm not talking about that. But maybe instead of 18 in a class, there's 20 in a class.
You keep talking about affecting the budget at the education level. I haven't heard a single word about affecting the budget on the administration level.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah, well, okay. And I'm not trying to pick on teachers when I say it that way. That's where the biggest money goes. So if we cut it, we could cut a couple of administrative positions.
So if you,
it's not going
to
change.
If you're paying $400,000 back per year to the reserve, you want to do another couple hundred thousand dollars, you could cut an administrator. Actually, there's a few. One administrator. Mm-hmm. And then you'd be able to put another couple hundred thousand
I'm not disagreeing with you. Right.
Back to.
Yes, absolutely. That's certainly possible.
There's got to be an administrator somewhere here that, you know, rather than hitting the, because we don't want to do anything to degrade, you know, the word.
We know what you're saying.
the education in the district. You know, we don't want to hit the, you know, increase class size. We certainly don't want to cut programs. We went down that road before. I've been in the district a long time. We went down that road. We don't want to cut electives. We want to make sure that we have the best education. So I think we need to maybe look not at the teachers, not at the programs, not at the class sizes, but maybe at the administration.
Right. Is there any redundancy within the administration?
Right.
I'll also add that we were already on an indicator list, a top spender per student in 2019. This is prior to pandemic. So you come into, you know, 2021, and of course we're going to be spending more money because of COVID, but we were already seeing the red lights that the district was overspending. So I think there was already stress within the district and its own budget. I think there's probably a spending, people voted for the budget, and it is what it is, but previous years. But I think there's probably some pretty good indicators saying that the amount we spend per student, regardless of how they're split out with special education, whatever, just the overall, to end up at the top of that list just shows that there is something fiscally unfit within the district. So I think that's before COVID even came. So when we enter COVID, yeah, we had to borrow quite a bit from the reserves. But those are two mutually exclusive things, whether the district is fiscally fit and whether we borrowed money for COVID. So, yes, we should have borrowed money for COVID. I'm glad we did. But I think there were other things that added to that stress.
Well, no, just because we were third most cost per pupil or whatever, it doesn't necessarily mean we were not financially.
Well, we had the money coming in and the money going out. The question is
we were
spending more than we should have.
2019, unassigned reserve percentage in 2019.
Say that
what
again.
What was our unassigned reserve percentage in 2019?
3 points something. I don't remember exactly. Yeah.
Now,
one of the things that contributes to that, and I'm not picking on teachers. So when I talk about teachers and number of teachers, because that's the single biggest thing that we spend money on.
But
I'm
it's
not
also
saying,
the most important thing.
I'm
there's
not
all these other
you.
Things.
Not
which
you not
spend $600,000.
I think you understand
but
why we're
not,
asking
I'm not
for
disagreeing with
those
non-instructional so we're spending $600,000 per classroom. Well, I don't know what the teacher's cut of that is, but
what?
It's not going to be more than $200,000.
Wait.
So
$600,000
per
classroom.
I calculated, given roughly the class sizes we had in our budget, that's roughly what we spend. There's a lot of stuff besides teachers.
Absolutely. I'm not saying there isn't. But part of the teacher's salary, though, too, is we have a very senior teaching staff. So of our teaching staff, which includes social workers, psychologists, speech pathologists, guidance counselors, that's all within teaching staff. And that get paid from the teacher salary schedule. So of all of those people that we have, over 54% of them are, if you look at the salary schedule, there's 30 steps in a teacher's salary schedule. 54% of them are at step 25 or higher. So it's a very senior teaching staff. Now, so there's only so much that can be done about that. If we start, we can reduce some administrative positions. We could cut a couple of custodians. We could cut some clericals. We can, you know, whatever. We could do that kind of stuff. And even if we cut some teaching positions because we either increase class size or whatever, by cutting positions, who goes? The junior people, not the senior people, the junior people. Now, what's going to happen doesn't help us now, as I talked about last time. Doesn't help us right now, but coming up soon, by soon, I don't know what that means exactly, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, we're going to see a lot of teacher retirements. As I said, we have more than half, 54% of our teachers are at step 25 and up.
Okay, so in the new budget, you had a retirement incentive. Now, you seem to be saying that that retirement incentive actually hasn't worked. Is that what you're saying?
It hasn't worked?
Well, we've still got a lot of teachers who you say are going to retire but haven't actually retired.
I don't think you said they're not eligible.
No, I didn't say that. We have of our teachers that are eligible, we have a good chunk of them retiring this year. But they could be at step 25 and not eligible to retire. But by more than half of our teachers at step 25 or higher, Even for the same, you take us, even if you took the exact same school district with the same exact everything, but that's a much younger teaching staff, they could have, of course, half of ours in that category. So I don't know what we could do about it, but, I mean, that's where we are. There's nothing we can do about having a senior teaching staff.
Can I just ask a budget question? So it's budget season. I'm guessing that you've, or maybe it's the director of business operations.
Uh-huh.
They've probably met with all departments. Have there been any requests from the departments as they're going through their lined, you know, detailed budget that maybe they're trying to keep their budgets more flat? Maybe?
Well, we told all of our principals and directors, anyone who has control over budget codes, that any of the codes that they have discretion over spending, no increase for next year.
Okay, because I remember last meeting looking at the budget from last year and some of the increases from the previous year to the current year, and I noticed things like, maybe it was like in the music field trips, they went up, you know, a certain percentage. And I just feel like that's something that doesn't look good when you're saying that you're, you know, struggling financially, you need to replenish your reserves. Then why are we increasing people's budgets and adding more than the previous year?
Okay, so we're not increasing their budget. So like for instance, I might say to you, if you're a principal, these are the budget codes mm-hmm. that you have discretion over, right? Let's say there's 20 of them, and they add up to, let's make up a number, $100,000. Next year, in those same budget codes, you have the same $100,000.
Right.
Now, if this year you had to buy some new classroom furniture, but you don't need as much next year, and you want to instead of budgeting more money in furniture, mm-hmm. you want to move it to instructional supplies,
right.
That's okay. As long as you stay within that same $100,000, So if you look at any individual budget code, you might say, well, wait a second. They had $1,000 last year, and it's going up to $6,000 next year.
But they took it from somewhere else. Right.
Yes.
So who sits with these administrators to go through their budgets line by line?
Well, we don't sit with them and go through line by line.
So there's not like a review with the business official to sit down and to say, okay, what did you spend last year? Let's talk about this. Why do you need this? You know, or maybe ask them, like, is there something?
I ask them to give me that information. Tell me what it is you think you need next year, and I go over that. Yeah. We don't meet with them as a group.
Because I know in some districts they do that, where they meet with all the administrators to go through and see kind of the money. But I'm just thinking about during COVID, you know, that closure, and we weren't sure if schools were going to reopen or what was going to happen. And I know how easy it is, like, when you get that phone call to say, like, listen, we're struggling with the budget. Can you take a little money out? You know, you're able to, in 15, 20 minutes, wiggle out $100,000. Like, I just feel like maybe there needs to be some conversations with these administrators and these departments that have these big budgets to say, where can you save that little extra money so that we're not stuck in the situation? We can put a couple $100,000 of that money back into the reserves.
I guess that's kind of like a little bit of the focus, I think, that I guess we're talking about. Like, trying to find ways where you're not cutting student-facing staff, right? That's what we talk about. And programs for our kids, and increasing class sizes in the elementary. If there's a way to do it either with maybe redundant administration, or if there's budgets maybe that can be cut back a little bit, something like that, I think that's something that we would like to.
The standard things that would happen in many other educational institutions is the department heads get told they've got a 2% cut, and there's a freezing hire, right? I mean, they're the kinds of things that happen all the time. And in business, it's often even more dramatic. I mean, you have to set some financial goals here. You can't just say, well, we're always going to take the 2% if you've got a declining enrollment.
I understand what you're saying. But we do that. We meet with all of the principals and go over their staffing requests for the following year. And sometimes they ask for more, sometimes not. And there's, I mean, lots of meetings about that. And if they need an increase, whether it's in a particular budget code, staffing, whether it's clerical staff, instructional staff, more aides or more whatever, anything they're asking for, they have to justify why they need it to us. Absolutely.
I kind of think that we really kind of agreed as a committee that we really don't want to touch any teaching staff.
Right.
So
yes.
But I think what we're looking at is, when we're looking through the budget, there are line items like travel. So we know that we need to pay back our reserves. So why aren't we taking all of that money, except for, you know, the needed travel, which I'm sure there is a few, but why are we giving, you know, $80,000 to teachers to travel for the year? Don't travel for the year. Put a traveling freeze for 2 or 3 years, and then put it back.
Right.
So you're going to be getting almost $200,000 or $100,000 that you can dump into reserves. There are things like that in the budget that really doesn't affect anybody. And the teachers are keeping their jobs. The students are happy. We can add new programs if we wanted to add STEM back. If you want to add that back, but you need to find 3 or 4 positions that you're losing to get that back.
Right.
You know, there needs to be a give and take on things that aren't going to affect staff that much and students. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of that in the budget that we can go through.
We really didn't do any travel this year, mostly, I'm going to say, outside of Long Island because of COVID. We were trying to keep our teachers in school and not really traveling.
Right, and but it's there.
Right.
So it's in the budget. So when you're creating the budget for next year, there should be nothing in those lines. And whatever's in those lines should be going back to reserves. Or if somebody needed to add an extra program in and we wanted to do that, we have the money for it.
You know,
or we fund not getting an increase in taxes. Or it goes towards not increasing in taxes.
Rather than saying you're a principal and you have $100,000 because that's what you had last year, what do you need? I'm more of a zero-based budget type of thing. If you're decreasing here, that's great. But why do you have to increase there? Why, you know, maybe
Well, here's what I
you
will
say.
I've seen this
line,
happen many times
line
over the
line
years in school districts, not just school districts, Rihanna, in the Navy too. There's a theory of budgeting where, even if you watch The Office, the show The Office, they had one about this. Oh, you didn't spend all your money last year, so your budget's going to get cut next year. What does that do? That tells everybody you better spend every penny you have, whether you need it or not. And I firmly believe that costs more money in the long run. If we look at a budget code and we see a principal had, whatever, $10,000 for instructional supplies, and they only spent $7,000, and we say, well, we're cutting you down to $7,000 next year. What is that principal going to do? Forever, is spend every single penny they have in their budget.
But that's where this committee that Rihanna's talking about comes in. I mean, basically, you've got to go into each department and go through their budget and ask, is this real? Do we really need to spend this?
Well,
okay,
but we do pay the principals to do their job too.
That would be the principal's job to do that, is what you're saying.
Well, if a principal says, I need this for my school, I mean, you know, if it's as long as it sounds reasonable, I mean, if they say, this is what I need to buy, I need this, I need this, I need this, and I need this. I mean, if it sounds ridiculous,
right.
that's a different story. I'm not talking about anything, and I'm not saying anything they ask for.
Right.
But we do pay them, their administrators in the district, and they're professionals, and hopefully they're not just spending money just to spend money.
Okay, well, what you just said about they're going to spend every dime they have.
Well,
now you're saying they're professionals, so they're not going to do that. Which one?
Well,
that's it.
All right.
I think it's two separate things.
It's two separate things I'm talking about. So I'm not saying every single principal and every single director and every single chairperson, if they get a budget line cut, is now going to spend every penny they have in their budget. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying every single one. But that's going to be in people's minds when they get towards the end of the year. I have money left in my budget. If I don't spend it, it's going to get cut. So I'll go out and get stuff. So I have it. Now, if they say, I need to buy this many folders, I don't know how many folders they need. I don't know. If a principal says, this is the stuff I need to buy for my building, okay. We have to listen to them too. And if they say, well, this is what I need to buy, okay. As long as it's reasonable.
You absolutely do have to listen to them. I totally agree with that. I mean, I've done budgets and I have to listen to the department head because I'm in the finance and I don't know what you lawyers need over there or what you need over there. I totally understand that. But they have to justify any increase. And we don't just say, okay, well, you know, your department had $100,000, so you get $100,000 and you allocate it any way you want. You allocate what you want and, you know, what you need and justify any increase. And if you only spent, or if you, you know, only spent $5,000 on this line item, even though you had $10,000 in the budget, what's the reason that you didn't spend the whole amount?
Is it
because something didn't happen that's going to happen next year?
Well, sure. Keep in mind,
or
when we put the budget together,
something didn't happen that will never happen again.
Well,
you base a budget on something, and something happens one year, so they spent $10,000 this year. Maybe $5,000 that is never going to happen again, but they're going to have $10,000 every year going forward because that's what they had spent that year.
Wouldn't it be reasonable to say to the department heads, look, we have to pay back $400,000 a year, so we need to cut overall as a group $400,000 a year? Show me what you don't actually need in your budget.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, if they absolutely need 7,000 folders, they need them. But maybe they don't need more monitors for their computers or whatever this year, per se, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure,
absolutely. And I guess what we're asking, is that a place where we can try and rectify some of the concerns that we have, right? So I think that that's all
Sure. Okay.
Jeff, there's no right number here. Nobody's pretending, look, this is the right number, this is the right number, this is the right number. There's a force from the community saying, and Carmen expressed it pretty well, that we're really at the top of the limit of spending here in the nation, right? So there's an understandable force saying, well, we shouldn't do that. We should cut back a little. And I understand there's a force internally saying, well, we should spend as much as we can. We should make it as grand and as wonderful as possible, right? But you're not giving us a process by which you balance those forces.
Okay, I get that. All right. We'll work on trying to put that together for you. I think I know what you're saying. Yeah. We try to put together the best program we can for our kids.
And that's
given the parameters
we have.
No
one's suggesting you shouldn't. And as I've said multiple times, I think you do a fantastic job. And I think particularly during COVID, you did an unbelievably good job.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
I mean, I really believe that, right? I'm just saying that there is this other group not so happy.
Okay. Absolutely, and you know what? Taxes are high. No one's saying they're not, and I do promise you. I mean, we will go through and we will cut where we can. I don't get my salary based on how high the budget is. Absolutely, we'll go through. If we can cut, we can cut. We hear what all of you are saying. And we will go back to all of our principals and directors and say, you got to do something. You're going to have to cut where you can. And just like we said for this year, travel, except for absolutely necessary, is out. Maybe that's the same for next year. Maybe that's the same for the next couple of years. Maybe, I don't know, maybe 5 years from now, we start having 50, 60 teachers retire a year, and there's a lot of money available because, hey, then maybe that's a different story. But for now,
lower our cost, the number that Carmen was bringing up about us per pupil cost we have.
Mm-hmm.
If at one point, I'm assuming it's because we have an older population of teachers.
That's the probably single biggest reason.
That makes perfect sense.
Not the only thing, but the single
makes
biggest.
Perfect sense. So going forward, if there was a large amount of teachers retiring, and we do hit that threshold, because eventually they all will retire, all those ones that are senior teachers that are ready to retire and are have their full pensions and all that. Would our cost per pupil then come down to something more reasonable?
Absolutely.
When that happens?
Yes.
And I guess the concerns some people have are, we're not going to backfill that with new stuff to keep that per pupil thing, price tag up.
I don't think people would even complain if you offered more electives and you found a higher, some way of increasing academics.
Mm-hmm.
And still held the line. I don't think anyone would be necessarily complaining about that.
Right.
But I do think that when you just show that you're, but I mean, by most metrics that I could come up with, very mediocre as far as academics go, but you're spending.
I think we would take exception to that.
I'm going to turn it over to our CEO.
I have heard that comment many times. I'm not really on social media, but I hear that is all over social media. I would love for you to provide me with the data
the most common is New York, U.S. News is probably the most common.
I would love to see the data that you're looking at, and I would love to sit with you and go through that data.
Well, so New York State Education has their own metrics, as does U.S. News and World Report.
Yes.
So, I mean, those are just two very common ones.
Yes, but I would love to go through the data.
We probably don't do well in the diversity part of it.
But there's a lot of districts that don't, and they still rank quite high in those.
That's a big,
middle. And Mississippi is one of those companies.
And let's keep in mind that AP, the number of courses, we offer every AP course that is imaginable and beyond in Three Village. We're one of the very few school districts that have multivariable calculus and linear algebra. So I would defy almost anybody to find a school district like ours who offers that. But with regard to AP courses, many of our students take them. However, they don't take the tests. And part of the reason for that is a lot of our students go to the higher level colleges. Many of the higher level colleges do not take the AP scores. So for those students to sit for the test makes absolutely no sense for them. And plus, if they do sit for it, sometimes if you sat for, let's say, inorganic chemistry, AP chemistry is inorganic chemistry, and then you go to a college and they want you to jump from, they won't give you the core, they won't give you the credits for the inorganic. They'll just move you to organic chemistry. The student is studying for medicine or biology, they're chemistry, they're not going to want to do that. They're going to want to take the inorganic chemistry class, get a better score, and not do that. So what happens for many school districts with regard to AP courses is they take the courses, it's required, they require the students to take, if you take an AP course, you must take the AP exam. I've been here for 38 years, and I was a guidance counselor. Never in the history of Three Village have we required students to take an AP exam. They don't. They don't take it with the same level as other schools. I live in Miller Place. Kids take the exam much more frequently in that school district. Our students just don't. And so therefore, when they're looking at these scores, they're not looking at how the student has scored. If you want to look at our students who score on the AP exams, they're extremely high. But they're not looking at that. They're looking at the number, just the number. So you can get a score of 1, but that's still working to your advantage as a school. That's the lowest you can get on an AP test. So I think we have to take those statistics into very serious consideration.
Don't we also get hit a little because our ninth graders are junior high?
No, not really.
No,
that really, we get hit on diversity. We're not quite diverse. Our demographics, that's just who we are. So we do take a somewhat of a hit on those niche and the U.S. world and world report, whatever you want to call that, yes. We do take a hit on for the diversity of our school district. We never score particularly well in that area. But in terms of our academics and how our students score, so that information would be really helpful for us because we'd really, I know Laura would love to delve into that.
So we get hurt by the students who don't take the exam? Yes.
That
I
is correct.
I didn't know that.
Yes, that
That's
is correct.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
And in the school districts where they're mandatory to take the exam, do sometimes the kids not get the credit in that school district if they don't pass that exam?
That is correct.
Yeah. So
well, not passing it, they're not taking it.
Not
they're,
taking
because
it.
Those
they
scores
won't,
don't come out until after.
And they won't give those kids credit for AP.
They may not. I don't know, but they won't give them the credit if they don't sit for the exam. But in some of those school districts, they also pay for the students mm-hmm. to take the exam. So, and the exam could be costly. We, of course, for students who do want to take it, they do have, the College Board does offer waivers for those students who can't afford to take the exam. So, and I, right.
Yeah, that,
so,
no
but if you look at the fact that we have two classes of students in multivariable and linear algebra, and that is beyond AP Calculus BC. So most of those students in other districts would have to go to the university to take those courses. I also want to, I don't know if anybody had a chance to listen at the community forum, but I did talk a little bit about enrollment, and I just want to make sure that this committee also is aware of that information. This year we had 105 more elementary students this year than we did last year. So that, you know, trending where you saw it go, on a decline is now going in the opposite direction. So we are seeing some flattening out at our elementary schools and also at the junior high. I think in total between the high school and the junior highs, probably like a little less than 100 students, but more students at the elementary level, so it kind of all balanced out. So I don't think we could honestly say that we're on an enrollment decline anymore. I think that is changing.
Well, that's an unusual year. I mean, I actually know people that moved into the district because of COVID. They've come from big cities. That's a one-off.
Well, but I don't know that they're going to be leaving. So I think
they may not leave, but it's just a one-year thing. I mean,
well, it could be.
It could return to trend very easily.
But it could be. But we also have to keep in mind that we do have a lot of people in our community who are older, who don't have children, and given the housing prices right now, I could see that people who might not have thought about selling might think about selling to people who are looking to move into the district.
Can I just ask a question about the younger population? So it is not very affordable to move into this community with young children, especially when you're paying for daycare and other expenses. Is there a chance that our pre-K program will ever transform into a full-time program for the district residents, for children, with the retirements and everything else, at a not increase to the budget?
That's always a possibility, but it would have to be because we have more retirements coming forward. Right now, we can accommodate, this year we accommodated 180 pre-K students. Typically, we did 200 prior to COVID. I'm hoping next year the district will go back to 200 so that we can add those additional 20 students into the class. Other parents choose to go to a private school, but we really have, I would say maybe we had 20, 25 students on a wait list this year, and as students dropped out, we were able to accommodate some of them. It would be nice to accommodate. I would love to have I would love to have a pre-K program. I want to be careful what I'm saying here. Because universal pre-K is very different. Mm-hmm. To have a pre-K program where every parent would be able to send their child. There is a great advantage for our teachers to be able to see the children at 4 years old.
Right. So I feel like if we were able to save that money, even if you had to go to the cap and you save that money in the budget somewhere by asking people to give back a little in other areas, and the benefit is this full-time pre-K, it really takes a lot of pressure off working parents in this community who have to worry about where to send their children. And you might also get those children in, you know, before and after school SAC, which is other revenue. So there's little things like that that could be possible, and I would really love to see.
We as a district cannot run, to be clear, a full-day pre-K, which is why we supplement it with the enrichment program. We're not by law allowed to do that.
Right, but you could have a scope or somebody else come back in.
Yes, but we've been basically using an enrichment program, which because parents have to pay for scope, and we think the enrichment program, the way it works right now, is actually better for our students. We had scope here.
We had scope.
Yes.
And we think we're doing it much better. So.
And I just want to mention one thing, kind of along the lines of what we were talking about before. And just so you know, when I'm speaking with you or anyone in the community, a lot of times when I'm talking about the budget and what's in the budget, and I know what comes across is I'm defending what's in the budget. Okay, I mean, that's kind of my job. But just so you know, and I don't want this to go.
It's not kind of your job.
Part of my job. But a big part of my, not just my job, but Cheryl's job too, when we meet with the principals and the directors, it's the opposite. It's not, what do you need? Tell us what you need. Oh, sure. It's the exact opposite. It's you, principal, director, whoever, you have to justify to us why you want what you want.
Jeff, you don't have to be defensive here.
Nah,
we understand
but,
that.
But
right?
I do want you to
this
know
this is
that,
a political
though.
Process.
Yeah,
like
of course
I said, there's no
yeah.
correct answer
yeah.
here.
Right. Right.
It's just we have to represent the community as
of course.
A whole, and that means we have to ask questions about why things keep going up,
of course
enrollment's
do.
Going down,
right.
why things keep going up, full stop. Right?
But we do want you to know that we don't lose sight that we work for you. We know that. We absolutely know that. So, you know, we don't think otherwise. We work for the board, but we work for you. We work for the community. We understand that.
Kind of.
You know, it's hard because so much of it would be making numbers up when it comes to state aid.
Yeah, because that might be good too for us to provide to the board, saying what we are looking for in the future.
Sure.
Like we want this
sure.
to happen. We know it can't happen now, but it needs to happen within the next, you know, four
absolutely.
Or 5 years.
Yep.
And just to increase the degree of difficulty here, it would be good to tie that into educational goals, right? I mean, we spend this money to teach, right? And in any institution, it's possible to lose sight of the main purpose of the institution, right? And so it would be good to tie this into what are our specific goals? What do we want to see? Do we want to see a 10% change, improvement in math scores in elementary school? How do we achieve that, right? How do we get the ranking of, say, elementary math to be considered one of the best in the county, one of the best in the state, one of the best in the country? What are the goals? How are we going to get there, right? Do you want to, I mean, Michael's that's adding a lot to the like degree of difficulty here, right? And I'm just picking elementary math at random here. I mean, it's not something I particularly care about, right?
All right, sounds good. Two more quick things. Well, kind of three, but state aid. So I don't know if you saw the information in the governor's budget proposal. I was actually kind of happy with it. It was give us the governor's proposal has us getting about a little under $1.6 million more. So that was actually good. I was afraid that the way the foundation aid formula works, what I was kind of afraid of was that it was all of the increase was going to be in foundation aid, but in a way that would have excluded us. Not like pick on Three Village, pick on districts of a certain wealth. And I was glad to say that they put in what they call a safe harm list, that every district would get at least a 3% increase on the foundation aid piece. So that's what's driving a big chunk of our increase. So we were happy to see that. You know, it's not exactly swimming in dough like some other districts, but we certainly can't complain. I also gave out the initial budget numbers for our benefits and debt service, which is bond payments. Those numbers that was included in there, those numbers are kind of, they are what they are, kind of. But if you have any questions, if you look over that, if you have any questions, let me know.
How much did they go up
percentage-wise? It varies. The employees' retirement system, the contribution rate's going down. The teachers' retirement system rate's going up. Health insurance, our health insurance is going up 2.5%. NYSHIP, by the way, was going up, I think, in January went up like 9.5% or something like that. Our debt service is pretty flat, not a big increase or decrease. So you'll see the information in there. But again, it's kind of what it is, and those are on a short-term basis, we have no control over them. Of course, you know, when it comes to number of staff and all of that kind of stuff, you know, that's what drives benefits also. So if we were talking about, you know, staffing and cutting positions and that kind of stuff, of course that would change the benefits also. This is based on our current staffing. So that could change as over the next couple of months as the budget develops too, if there were going to be a change in our staffing levels. So we'll start. We have some homework. As we get information together, we'll send it out to you. If there's anything you want, in addition to what we talked about tonight, let me know. We'll be glad to get you whatever we can. Does anyone have any else tonight they want to ask?
So I just want to clarify something with regard to the leads, and we will certainly get you a list of all of the leads. Are you looking for their job description for each person? Sure.
We just want to have that idea because we just have to look at what administration we have, what chairs, and then look at the leads and think about,
right,
you know, what are these essential positions,
right,
that we have. We just have to
understand
that.
And all of the leads, with the exception of the leads in FACS, Family and Consumer Science, and Technology, have full schedules, except they're released for a 0.2 each. Of their schedule, so they teach four classes. It's because of the way it's spread out, and they don't have direct supervision, really. So that is one of the reasons. And then, of course, our technology coaches, they're called coaches. So We'll put categories together so that you can understand that those who are removed from the classroom to do other kinds of responsibilities as well as the leads.
Okay, sorry. One more comment. Featureitis, right? One of the problems with like modern cars was that everybody just kept pumping features into the car, right? And it wasn't actually improving the quality of the car. It wasn't improving the quality of the experience. It was just to say, well, we've got all these features, so we're as good or better than the competitors, right? And when you say, well, we've got every AP course, that doesn't mean as much to me as saying we've got the best writing course in the county or in the town, right? I mean, what I think a lot of parents want to see on the educational level is we're doing the core, not all the periphery, we're doing the core better than everybody else, right? I think, and that, so simply saying we've got all these features, that's not in itself a plus necessarily. It can easily be perceived as a negative.
I would tend to disagree with you, and I would actually say that we're doing both. Based on, I've been here a long time, and I know how our students are succeeding. I know that when our students are leaving Three Village, the level of success that they're having at the post-secondary level.
This is not about rankings.
No, and I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the quality of education that students are receiving in this school district. And I can speak to it firsthand, both as a parent whose child came here on a tuition basis, and also a child who was educated in a different school district. So what I'm saying to you is I know the quality of education that our students are receiving in Three Village. So it's not just about the features that we have. It's also about the training that we do with our teachers. It's about the quality of programs that our students are offered and the quality of education. You talk about writing. We created a writing center at Ward Melville High School and until COVID at our junior high schools, which is something that kind of mimics what you see in college level programs, where students who aren't just needing academic services, but students who could do it for enrichment and for other purposes, just like they do at the university level, to go to a writing center and work with teachers.
Again, it's
being in the high school, I've seen those things work. And I know there was also plans to put a math one in the high school, too. We discussed that, and then, of course, we blew up COVID. But there was that same kind of writing center that they had there. I know we were just in discussions at PTA meetings with Ms. Burham about doing that same kind of a thing for math as well.
Right.
It's very difficult to do everything at a level of excellence, right? I mean, any institution has to set priorities and say, these are the things we're really going to try and excel at. And that's the point I'm trying to make, is that it's possible to become too diffuse and not really excel at the core. And that's where, again, priorities over funding start to become really an issue, right? Are we going to invest in the core? Are we going to expand what we do? And those are budgetary issues at one level, but they're educational policy at another. So that needs to be discussed.
Jeff, I have another question. Are there any major capital improvements that need to be done in the district? Or can you talk about that next time?
Well, yeah, sure, we can talk about that next time.
There? So I'm just looking for like a big chunk of...
I mean, our buildings are in great shape.
Okay.
But there's always work that needs to be done. What we were going to discuss with the board a couple of potential projects to include in the budget for next year, capital projects, nothing huge. We would like to, over the next several years, start to build that line back up, the capital projects line. One of the things that there's been some requests for, it's not for this coming up budget, would be the football field at the high school make it a turf field, replace the bleachers and scoreboard.
Okay.
That was one of the things that, okay. You know, not for now.
Okay.
That's kind of looming now, request for that.
Okay. Yeah.
But we could, sure, we could talk about that.
If, you know, if there's anything that could be an issue over the next, for this upcoming year.
Yeah, our buildings are in very good shape.
Good to hear.
You know, like I said, there's always something that is.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to talk about your house, my house. There's always
exactly.
something that needs to be done.
But, I'd like to thank you for spending this time with us and
oh, sure.
Our
and listen, you know,
too.
We hope, I mean, what we really hope is that, you know, we come, the committee comes to a consensus, you know, when we get a couple of months from now and the budget gets, goes to be adopted by the board, that, I mean, I'm hoping that the committee will say, you know what, we endorse the budget. That's really what I'm hoping for, you know, and I hope we can get to that point. So, yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. So, all right, have a good night, everyone. Funny, sometimes it's the microphone. The microphone.